Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. The show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxinethompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artists First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. As you know, I'm the author of the novel, The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel, Hostage of Lies, short story collection, A Place Called Home, and novel L.A. Blues, and upcoming novel L.A. Blues 2. Many of my books are available on Kindle. Tonight's guest is author Dr. Lynn Zimmerman. She is the author of Heal Yourself, Using the Scientifically Proven Mind-Body Connection to Manage Chronic Pain, Depression, Cancer, and More. Good evening. How are you doing, Dr. Zimmerman?
I'm well. Thank you so much, Maxine. I appreciate it.
Yes, and you said I could call you Dr. Z.
Please, yes.
Yes, I like your... I have a character named Z in my thriller series.
Is that right?
Yeah, L.A. Blues and L.A. Blues 2. That's a nickname, Z.
But my clients always call me Dr. Z, so...
Oh, okay, good. Well, tell us about yourself.
My first practice was physical therapy and chiropractic care. And the people who came to me actually were the ones who inspired this book eventually. I had been trained in orthopedics and neurology, reading x-rays, looking for x-ray pathologies, bone pathologies. And I was trained to recognize organic illness. What I wasn't trained for was to expect the kind of patients who came to me initially. The people who came to me who were attracted to my first practice were, as well as now actually, were the people who had given up hope, people who had been told there's nothing more that we can do for you. Mm-hmm. And it was seeing the hopelessness in their eyes and hearing about their pain that made me realize that I needed to practice in a different way, that I needed to be able to add more than I had been taught. I needed to give them first-rate medical care and the physical therapy and the chiropractic care, but I also needed to help them connect with their own power to heal. And what I discovered was that as I changed the way I practiced, when I would show them their x-rays, for example, and give them their report of findings for their orthopedic and neurological findings, instead of just telling them how things were at the time, I would also then give them a picture of how things were going to be when they continued with the therapy, when they engaged in their own power, giving them a picture of what it would be like for the nerves to wake up, for the muscles to heal, for the joints to regain some range of motion. And they began forming a picture in their minds of what would happen as they healed. And when they did that, and we talked about this at every therapy session, about the nerves waking up, what was happening, when they formed this mental picture, they began to participate in their own healing. And as they began to have some good days, they realized that they really had the healing power inside themselves, and they really connected with it, and they began to really participate in their healing. People who had come with rheumatoid arthritis, who couldn't tie their children's shoes, who couldn't pick up their children, hold them on their laps, they began to be able to do these things. Elderly patients began to be able to bend over and tie their shoes in the morning. Fathers who couldn't work, who couldn't push themselves up out of a chair without using their arms, began to gain strength in their back, be able to go back to work. So we saw miracles all the time with this, and I realized that it was because they were connecting with their own power to heal. They were seeing what they could really do. And besides seeing the physical miracles every day, I began seeing other changes in their lives as well. And I've seen this over the years, that once a person realizes that they can heal one part of their life, if it's an injured back or if it's a a hand that didn't work right, or if it's whatever it is, if once they realize that they can heal one part of their body, they begin doing this in other parts of their lives. They realize that they can create change in other places, better careers, expanded relationships, expanding their lives in all these other areas because they've connected with the power that they have inside. And this power is in every one of us, in every cell of our bodies, in every connection of our brain. And what I wrote about in Heal Yourself was essentially how to create a new brain map, how to talk to your brain so that it sends different messages to the cells, so that it sends different messages to our emotion centers, so that people can heal physically and emotionally, even change our subconscious blueprints. And this is what makes all the change happen on the outside of our lives. We change on the inside, everything on the outside changes as well. So that's kind of a little nutshell history and what inspired Heal Yourself to be written so that people could really connect with the healing power inside themselves. I discovered after I did some postgraduate work in hypnosis and medical hypnotherapy, studied energy medicine and quantum physics, I realized that energy medicines are what help us to do this. Energy medicines we can use directly to make changes in our brain, changes in our subconscious blueprints, to create the changes that we wanted to create physically and emotionally and in every part of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a section called The World According to Quantum Physics. How does that tie into energy?
When I was first reading about this, I had seen several things about quantum physics. I was researching it because I was looking for another source of power. I thought, how can we have more miracles? How can we see more? And if you want the most amazing ultimate power, you look at quantum physics, superstring theory, that kind of thing. And the research that I read told me that if we could harness the amount of power that is in the space between the nucleus and the electron cloud of one hydrogen atom, if we take one hydrogen atom and we could harness the power in the space between the center and the electron cloud, we would have more power than all the planets in our galaxy out to 20 billion miles. So I read this, and I read these different findings, and there was an implication that if we could harness this power, we could use it for every human change that we need, everything that we would like to use to transform human pain. But I could never find anything that said what that bridge was. What would be the bridge between quantum physics and human healing? How could we actually use that power mechanically? How could we capture it? What would the connection be? And I had been studying brain plasticity, the ability of the brain to change itself. If we give the brain the right training and the right commands, and any one of us can do this, the brain can actually change its physical form and its neurological function and change everything in our body and in our emotions. And one day when I was studying this, I had one of those light bulb moments that Oprah talks about when the light bulb goes on. Only for me, it felt more like a lightning bolt. It felt more like 1,000 light bulbs. And I realized that the plasticity of the brain, the brain's ability to change itself, that's our connection to quantum physics. There's a principle that says that at the level of Planck scale, which is tiny, tiny, the smallest scale that we have to measure matter, and it's 10 to the negative 35th power, at the level of Planck scale, energy, the energy of ideas, when it curls back on itself, becomes physical matter. And I realized then that that's how we transform and use the power of quantum physics to heal our bodies and our emotions. It's the plasticity of the brain, training the brain to do something different. There's a professor and his studies who were quoted and kind of encapsulated in the quantum physics chapter, Professor Tiller at Stanford University. He did these amazing studies to see how the energy of our intention could actually change matter. And this is where quantum physics comes in, because quantum physics says that we are connected to every other kind of energy, every other kind of matter. Every one of us is connected to each other and also to every other source of energy in the universe. And what Dr. Tiller did was he designed three sets of experiments, and they were to capture the energy of human intention in a small simple electrical device and then use that electrical device to power these experiments. And so what he did was he had four highly skilled meditating people, people who meditated regularly. He had them sit around a table with this simple electrical device in the center of the table. And the people would would clear the space of all other imprints, and then they would meditate for 15 minutes on the intention of the experiment as they were directing their intention to this electronic device. And then the electrical device would be wrapped in a Faraday cage, which is a housing that protects it from all other energies. It protects it from other electromagnetic energies. And the electrical device was shipped then 2,000 miles away to the site of the experiment, where it was placed by the site of the experiment. And the three different things that Dr. Tiller experimented with over the years was, one was raising or lowering the pH of water by one full unit. This is an immense amount of energy that it takes to do this. If the water that we drink is one pH unit above or below what we need, we die. So raising or lowering it by one full unit is incredible. This was one of the things that they experimented with, and this is what they did. When they would place the intention-imprinted electronic device next to the experiment, over a period of 3 days, the pH of the water would change, up or down. Another experiment that they did was changing the ratio of ADP to ATP in a test tube. This is an energy donor for cells, ATP. Again, the same results intending the message into the electronic device and shipping it 2,000 miles away, placing it by the experiment. Again, same results. They did this over a period of years, and in each case, the imprinted intention in these electronic devices changed physical matter. So he demonstrated in the strictest scientific terms that with our intention, with what we intend, with our mind, we can change physical matter. And that was incredibly inspiring to me, and I realized that he had shown us the way that intention is how we begin to change. Intention is really a matter of mind and heart. If someone wants to heal an illness, a chronic critical illness like cancer, for instance, the first thing we begin with is our intention to fully heal. And with that, we begin to impress our mind and our actual circuits in our brain with what we intend to create, which is this change in our health condition. I'll give you an example. A client of mine had years and years of debilitating pain. She had stress fractures in her spine because of long-term use of cortisone for pain. She had had dreadful pain as a result of a series of surgeries, and she just could not get rid of the pain. And as a result of using cortisone for a number of years, she lost all the bone density in her spine. She suffered compression fractures in three of her vertebrae. And for many patients, compression fractures create intractable pain that cannot be mitigated by conventional medical methods. So I worked with her and created visualizations for her in which she would increase her bone density. And in this visualization, it was 45 minutes, and this was how she began to train her brain that she wanted greater bone density in her spine, in all of the bones that had lost bone density. So she listened to this recording for 45 minutes every day, and in this recording was created the visualization of seeing her bones on X-ray, seeing them become whiter and whiter, denser and denser, taking on calcium and magnesium. And I used this visual with her because she's a physician herself. She was accustomed to looking at X-rays, so I created a visualization that would make sense to her training. If she had been a gardener, I would have used illustrations with flowers or seeds or something like that. And this is one of the things that helps us a great deal, is tuning in with the references that are most meaningful to us, training our brain in the ways that is accustomed to being used. And so she was accustomed to looking at X-rays. I made her recording as though she were looking at her own X-rays. She was in an experimental program with 59 other patients, an experimental drug for increasing bone density. After 5 months, they were all measured again. She alone had 3 times the increase in bone density over all the other patients in the study, and what she was doing was using this visualization. So she was training her brain, training her mind in what she wanted to happen in her body. She began healing her body with her mind, changing her brain map, changing the way her brain sent messages to the bones to create more density. So it's one example of how this can be done and how any of us can do it. We don't need any special training. You just need to know how to use these energy medicine techniques. Anyone can learn it. Anyone.
Well, you have a chapter here called The Power of Beliefs versus Genetics. Why did you write this chapter?
A lot of us have subconscious beliefs that we don't realize that we've taken on, and even the beliefs that we have, we don't realize how strong they are. Changing our beliefs can change everything. A lot of people have the impression, and they've been told this perhaps repeatedly by other people, that since they inherited something, a tendency toward cancer, a tendency toward heart disease, all these things, we've been trained to believe that we inherit these maladies. In fact, 95% of us come here with a perfectly wonderful genetic blueprint. And the brain can create 30,000 different outcomes no matter what genetic blueprint we come here with. By training our brain, we can change what's happening with the genes that we've been given. So, for instance, a person might have taken on the belief that because their father had heart disease, that they were destined to have it. This happens a lot in families with cancer. And the studies actually show us that children who are adopted, a child who comes from a family that has a genetic history of cancer, if this child is adopted by a family that does not have cancer, that doesn't talk about it all the time, that has no reason to discuss cancer, that child has a better than 80% chance of not ever getting cancer, even though their gene pool says that they should. In the same way, a child who has no family history of cancer, if this child is adopted into a family that has a history of cancer, that talks about it all the time, it's part of their daily reality, this child has a better than 80% chance of developing cancer, even though the child's genetic blueprint doesn't say that there's anything like that in their history. So our beliefs, our conscious beliefs and our subconscious beliefs about what we are going to manifest are heavily influence our outcomes. So our beliefs, changing our beliefs, can trump genes virtually every time. We have a 95% chance of changing our blueprint, no matter what it is, by changing our beliefs. And what we believe is what we have downloaded, what we have downloaded into our subconscious blueprint, and what we believe actively. Our beliefs are what shape our subconscious blueprint, the energy under the energy. And exploring our beliefs, exploring what we really believe, what we truly believe, as opposed to what we might think we believe consciously, is a key part in our healing. Exploring what we really believe.
Could you give an example of that?
Yes, absolutely. Let's say a person who would like to heal their back, for instance. They would like to heal this critical back problem that they have. And we would look at what are your beliefs about this? The way I advise people to start this is make a list of the things that are not the way you want them to be in your life. I want to heal my back, and my back isn't feeling good. All these different areas. Underneath why my back hasn't healed, for instance, then write the reasons why it hasn't healed. Okay, one reason might be, my doctor says it can't be healed because medicine hasn't helped me. Another reason might be, my dad had this, and my uncle had this, and two of my cousins have this, so I have it also. Another reason might be, I tried 12 therapies and nothing has worked. If you look at each of those reasons, what beliefs support those reasons? In the first case, my doctor has told me that this can't be healed because we've tried these things and they didn't work. The belief is, if someone tells me it can't be healed, then it can't be healed. What belief would we need to begin incorporating into our subconscious blueprint, into our mind, in order to actually heal it? The belief would need to be, no matter what someone else has told me, I am connected to universal energy. Quantum physics says that I'm connected to every healing energy, so I have every chance of being healed. Another belief, which is actually a scientific fact, is even with my genetic blueprint, I can create 30,000 different versions of myself, including one that has a healthy back. The second reason, which was, my father had this, my cousins had this, my uncle has this. The belief supporting that reason would be, if my family has this, then I must have it also. So to create a new belief that would support the healing, the belief would be, no matter what my blueprint is, I know I can create 30,000 different versions of myself. No matter what my family has, I am an individual and I can heal this. Another supporting belief would be, I know that I can change my brain map and send new messages to my back to change the way it feels. And the third one, which was, I've tried 12 different therapies and they didn't work. The belief that's supporting that one is, if these therapies didn't help, nothing else will help either. Again, the supporting belief to support the healing, the different belief would be, there are many roads to healing, including changing my brain. There are many roads to healing. I will explore more roads, and eventually I will find the one that is perfect for me, including changing the way my brain works, changing the messages my brain is sending to my body. So if there is a part of someone's life that they really want to change and they haven't been able to change it, I ask them to first write down the reasons that they haven't changed. Then I ask them to look at what beliefs would support the not changing reasons. When we look at those beliefs, we look at what would be the reverse. What would be the reverse of that belief? And we write that down, and then we begin working on changing the beliefs with a number of energy therapies, with brain balancing, with hypnosis, with meridian tapping. All of those are excellent, with affirmations. All of those are excellent ways to start retraining the brain and the subconscious mind, retraining the subconscious imprints to support whatever it is that the person wants to change. So that's one example of how we would do that.
Okay. They called that divorcing the story on Oprah's Life Lessons class. That we have so many stories we tell ourselves that keep us in a self-sabotaging kind of mode.
Absolutely. You're entirely right. The stories that we tell ourselves, we can change the stories. You know, we can change the stories.
Yes. Well, the lizard brain resistance, let's talk about that. What does that mean?
The lizard brain is an example of how a person can read 100 self-help books or 1,000, start on the program, and then start feeling so edgy and irritable that they stop because they think, you know what? I feel awful. This isn't working for me, and they stop. The lizard brain is the most primitive part of the brain. A part of it is the amygdala. The lizard brain wants us to keep everything the same, and this is the oldest part of the brain, the most ancient part of the brain. All of our ancestors who lived long enough to create us, they listened to the lizard brain that said, stay safe. If they saw bears or lightning or something outside the cave, they didn't go outside the cave. They listened to the lizard brain that said, you must stay safe, and they lived long enough to produce us. The lizard brain does not want us to change. Its only concern is that we stay safe. And so to the lizard brain, when we start creating something new, when we start thinking about something a new way, and we start creating a different brain chemistry, every time we think a new thought, there's a signature brain chemistry that goes along with it. The lizard brain, if it is accustomed to thoughts of illness, thoughts of pain, thoughts of guilt, thoughts of self-recrimination, unkindness, lack of self-compassion, whatever the lizard brain is accustomed to, whatever thoughts we're accustomed to thinking, including our negative thoughts, the lizard brain knows that as safety because it's our normal thought pattern. When we act to change something, our thoughts, the way we conduct our lives, the way we look at things, telling ourselves a new story, one that will support us. Doesn't matter if our old habits were destructive and our new habits are positive. To the lizard brain, it's a change, and it's very threatening. And so the lizard brain creates a brain chemistry that's so uncomfortable for us that we say to ourselves, you know what, I felt better before. In the old comfortable rut of the lizard brain, because our brain chemistry was comfortable. So just knowing that the lizard brain is acting up is enough to help us say, oh my gosh, I'm feeling so crappy today, but it's because of the lizard brain. And then something like meridian tapping, one of these other energy therapies, can help us get through that little crunch, that crunch where we're feeling awful. The lizard brain hates change. And even though our new plans, the things we're implementing that are wonderful for us, the lizard brain doesn't care. It doesn't care that we become our best selves. It doesn't care that we expand and become joyful and positive. It doesn't care that we heal. It wants us to stay the same. So when we start something new like this, something new to change and heal ourselves, when we start feeling bad, crappy, irritable, angry, this is the lizard brain changing our brain chemistry so that we'll go back to the old comfortable rut. If we can remember in that moment that we are so worth this change, we are so worth feeling good, we can do some meridian tapping, take a short walk, get through that period where that lizard brain for a few minutes is making us feel crazy, and then keep on going with what we're doing. If we can get past that and just know that the lizard brain is sabotaging us, just knowing it makes it easier to get through those parts where we feel really, really shaky and, oh, is this really worth it? And it is worth it. You are worth it. We are worth it.
Do you think that's what happens when people go on diets or, like, recently I gave up coffee and I had green tea every day, and I've been miserable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I advise people when it's something like caffeine to kind of move it gradually, to have, like, if they're used to coffee, then to have half caffeinated and half decaf for a while, a couple weeks, then go on a quarter caffeine and three quarters decaf, and do like that, and do it kind of gradually, and gradually get onto the caffeine. And yes, the lizard brain was definitely sabotaging you. It is always a factor in our not being able to do it. And same thing with the diet. You know, our brain chemistry is different than it was with the old foods that we were eating. Meridian tapping is something that really helps people with dieting, with food changes, with caffeine changes, with not smoking. I had a client recently who wanted to stop smoking. This client had been smoking for 30 years. They work in a casino where everything is smoke. And after four sessions, no smoking. Have no smoking at all. They are simply a non-smoker. And meridian tapping and hypnosis together are the things that I find are the most helpful to really reinforce the person. And they said, you know what? I'm tapping like crazy all the time. I'm not smoking. So meridian tapping can really help you get through that lizard brain part that really wants you to go back to the old chemical addiction, whatever it might be.
Can you explain meridian tapping? Is that tapping on the side of your head, or?
There's a chapter in the book on meridian tapping, and there are there's a little list of the different places to tap. When we use meridian tapping, we're tapping on acupressure points. They also call it acupoint tapping. Some people call it emotional freedom technique, because originally it was developed for emotional trauma. But meridian tapping is tapping on specific acupressure points on the face and the trunk of the body and the hands. And these are points where the body's energy meridians run very close to the surface, so that when we tap on that part, we're actually affecting it on both sides of the body. What happens when... one of the reasons that meridian tapping is so effective is that when we tap on these points, we are actually sending fear-dampening messages to the lizard brain. So when we tap on these points and we're focusing on something that's stressing us out, we verbalize what it is that's stressing us. Oh, I really want to smoke. It's really bothering me. I'm really stressed out right now. And we tap on those points as we're verbalizing what it is that's causing us this stress. We're sending fear-quieting messages to the lizard brain. The lizard brain can be quiet. When it is quiet, the prefrontal cortex, the part of our brain that's creative and that has all these solutions, can engage and say, oh, you know what? I'm feeling better. This is going to be okay. Another reason that meridian tapping works is that it's a very effective form of thought field therapy. When we're tapping, It is not so much an event or a situation that makes us uncomfortable. It's the meaning of that event or that situation that causes us pain. When we're tapping with meridian tapping, we change the meaning. Our brain takes on a different meaning, and we can begin the healing process. Meridian tapping is extremely effective for emotional trauma that revisits us that we can't seem to get over. Old memories. I've seen this effective for everything from PTSD of the worst kinds to ADHD to chocolate cravings. It is incredibly effective as a healing therapy, and it can help us get through the crisis moments if we're giving up an addiction of some kind. And so meridian tapping is tapping on acupressure points on the face and hands and trunk as we're focusing on what it is that is causing us distress. And it changes the way our brain processes this distress so that we feel calm, we have resource. Wonderful healing technique. Wonderful, wonderful healing technique.
Well, how about the hero's journey? I'm an editor and a writer of fiction, and one of the things I'm really beginning to tap into the hero's journey for storytelling,
mm-hmm.
and analyzing stories that I work on and showing the writer how, you know, so many of the blockbusters have used the hero's journey, from Titanic to The Godfather to Pulp Fiction. And so when you mention it in here, how do you relate to the hero's journey in healing oneself?
I see the ups and downs that we go through, and everyone does. In the patients in my first practice, I would tell them, and I didn't know why then, but I know now, I would tell them, no one heals in a straight up line. No one is better and better and better and better and better every day. We don't heal like that. We have ups and downs in our healing. We'll feel better and better for a couple of days, and then we have a day when we crash and we think, gosh, I feel worse than I ever felt before. This is a normal part of the healing curve. It is a normal part of healing emotional distress as well. And when I talk to clients now, I tell them the same thing. We have ups, we have downs. Eventually, we have more and more ups, fewer and fewer downs. But we know now that in the up and down curve of healing, when we're feeling bad, when we've had up days and then we have a down day, the brain is actually, or we have a plateau day even, the brain is actually reorganizing at a higher level in order to accommodate the healing that we have done and in order to go on to the next level of healing. It is a hero's journey to continue on the healing path when we feel bad, when things don't feel like they're going well, when we'd really like to have another hit, or whatever it is that we're healing ourselves from, when we'd like to engage in self-pity, when we have more physical pain. It is a hero's journey to continue on, to not go back to the old way of thinking, the old way of doing, to continue on even if we feel despair. This is where we must remember, where we can remember, we are worth this healing. Remember and focus on what we are creating for ourselves, the new life, the expansion, and that we are worth this life that we are creating. Meridian tapping can help us get through that, the real pit, the real pits of the healing journey. And it takes, to me, it's a hero's journey to continue on no matter how we feel. No one feels great all the time, and to continue on, even when things are not going well, when we're not seeing the fruits yet of what we're working on, that is being a hero. When we can't see it out here, but we're still working on the inside and making it happen. When I was writing Heal Yourself, I had some books of inspiration on my night table, and at night and in the morning, I would read about these people whose lives inspired me. Dr. Wayne Dyer was one. Winston Churchill was another. And one of the quotes that I love from Churchill was, and he wrote this during the war, and he said it to the people who he was talking to on these nightly radio addresses, keeping their hopes up during the darkest hours of World War II. And he said, "We shall bring from the heart of suffering itself the means for inspiration and survival." And I thought, this is from the heart of someone who has really suffered. We shall bring from the heart of suffering itself the means of inspiration and survival. When we are able to push through those moments of great suffering and continue on the path, what we want to create for ourselves, what we want to create for someone else, better health, being a better person inside, being more generous, being more kind, be what it is that we know we can be, what we've always dreamed that we could be, when we continue on, even when we're not seeing the fruits yet, that is being the hero. That is part of the hero's journey. And as we continue on that way, through those dark hours, we develop compassion. And the heart of the hero is full of compassion because they have gone through those dark hours. They have compassion for the person who comes behind them, who is following that same trail. They can tell them, I have been there. I am willing to help you with that. I have been there. You can get through it too. The heart of the hero develops compassion during those really dark moments.
Yes, it makes a difference, too, in seeing compassion in a person when they've, and they call that the mentor in the hero's journey, the guide, the person who sometimes is the supernatural. I think it was Obi-Wan in Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah, who's been to, here's the source, and they'll tell you how to get through.
Yeah.
So I like that. Oh, that's really great for seeing that as a metaphor in healing. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, meditating is something that helps us to connect with that inner mentor. Meditating, we slow down the conscious mind, the busy thoughts of the day, and when we meditate, when we just slow down even for a few moments during the day and completely withdraw from where we have to go, what we have to do, and just focus on breathing just for a few moments even, we begin processing with both halves of the brain. We go into alpha brainwaves, which is these are the brainwaves of the subconscious mind, the part that has all of our resources, the part that remembers everything we've ever learned, the part that has taken in all these images that have never come to our conscious mind. This is a form of mentor that we can all access, part of our highest self. When we meditate, we have access to that, and that our inner higher self can be a wonderful mentor for us during that hero's journey. It can be part of our mentoring, part of our inner power to connect with that self that we all have.
Yes, well, that's great. Well, speaking of the self, unshakable self-esteem, losing the inner critic. Now, this is great for writers as well.
Oh, yeah, writers, gosh, we criticize ourselves all the time, don't we? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, did I write that? Oh, no, people are going to talk about my book. They're not going to like it.
Exactly. It's our baby sending it out there. Oh, yes, my gosh. I think writers have larger inner critics than a lot of people. And, you know, and we all deal with the inner critic, but we don't realize it so much of the time because we have become accustomed to its voice. The inner critic is maybe a larger enemy than any outer enemy ever could be, because it's with us all the time, and we don't realize that it is creating this negative force within us. The inner critic, in order to lose the inner critic, we have to know what it sounds like first. And the inner critic voice is a voice that all of us hear, we just don't realize what it is. We sometimes think of it as being realistic, quote unquote, about ourselves. But the inner critic is the voice that says, I should have flossed this morning. I didn't brush my teeth long enough. I made a stupid move in traffic. My skirt is too long. My pants are too short. I need a new haircut. And, oh, yes, the boss gave me a dirty look when I walked in this morning. That's the inner critic. That's not real. That is not our compassionate self. That is not our self who loves us. That is not our self who can do great things. That is a voice that we have tuned into since the time that we were very small. We actually begin downloading subconscious messages like this at about the halfway point in pregnancy. Science tells us now that parents contribute non-genetic energy imprints to the child, and these are in the form of habitual response patterns that begin forming when the child is a fetus, about 4.5 months old. What happens is, at that point, the infant, the unborn brain, begins downloading in theta waves. And theta and delta waves are deep, deep brain waves that are entirely accepting. They download just like a computer download. So if the mother is hearing criticism, if she's hearing unsupportive statements, if she is fielding a lot of stress, the infant will download these impressions, these habitual response patterns, as a brain download, and it will become part of this infant's subconscious response patterns, part of their brain download. These are subconscious energy patterns that actually feed the brain's messages. And we continue to download whatever is around us, if it is supportive or if it is critical, thoughts of criticism, energies, conversations of criticism. Why did you do that that way? We continue to download this until we're about 7 years old. Whether it is valid or not, whether it helps us or not, whatever we hear in those deep brain waves from the time that we are unborn to the time that we're about seven, our brain downloads like a computer download, and we believe it to be true in our heart of hearts. And this forms the subconscious blueprint for all of our beliefs. So inner critic messages begin when we're very young, and then we continue to download these with media. You know, all the media hype about how we should look, how we should be. All of these things we download in alpha brainwaves. Alpha brainwaves are, again, the deeper brainwaves when we're not thinking. We hear these messages again and again. We download them without realizing that they are becoming part of our energy process, part of our energy blueprint. So recognizing the inner critic is key in actually evicting the inner critic and losing the inner critic. So the next time you think a thought like this, awareness is the first thing. Thinking, oh man, I did a bad job on that. Wake up and say, wait a second. Okay, if this is not the way I want it to be, I can change it. As opposed to, oh man, I could have done better with that. That's terrible. That's not what I wanted to say. Recognizing that it's part of inner critic energy and that we can change that. I had an experience like this recently, you know, and I write about this stuff regularly, and I think I was writing something and I looked at it and I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did it. I think I sent out an email without a web attachment or something like that, email address or something. And I thought, wait a second, this is total inner critic energy. This is saying, oh, you did a terrible job. And so I said to myself in that moment, okay, you can send out the email again with all of the attachments that you need or with all of the email addresses, whatever it was. You can do it again, you know, just recognizing that this kind of self-criticism is something we don't have to do. We can change the pattern. When we're supporting ourselves regularly, our creative output is so much better because we're not wasting energy on the criticism. We're not wasting energy on, oh my God, I did such a bad job. We are not wasting energy. We are using all that energy in creating new things. So losing the inner critic is recognizing it and then saying the statement a different way. As you said before, telling ourselves a different story.
And the thing I was thinking of on Twitter, I've heard some of the celebrities on different talk shows say how they almost cringe when they read some of the nasty things. We never before in history had a platform or a forum where people can just tell you, you suck, you this, you that.
In every moment, and it goes out to millions of people. It's true. We really have to have much more solid self-esteem now.
These were some of the confident talk show hosts I've heard say they just couldn't even, some days they couldn't even stand to look at it. And I've noticed, it seemed like this email was directed at me as if to argue. And I had put a typo up there, and I just deleted it and retyped my statement. Then they sent some else to try to pit me into an argument. I say, and I have a philosophy that's been part of my business model. If it's not making me money, I'm not going to sit and argue with people.
Oh, so there you go. Told, yes.
You know, I'm on Facebook to, you know, when it's things related to someone's death or marriage and happy moments and their babies,
right.
I'll comment. Those are the good things. But I try not to just spread all the negativity. We've got enough negativity in the world.
We have plenty. You know, we don't have to contribute to that, and you're entirely right.
This just have gone just too far. You know, it used to be the newspapers, they attack people, but the gossip, there's one called, oh, my goodness, I've never seen such viciousness. They say is it that people are miserable. So when I was looking at your book where you were saying that you cannot pay mass approval, artificial and unnecessary, you know, that it's all, you know, it's a wonderful thing when everybody loves you. And Alice Walker has a poem called Be No One's Darling. Remember that line in it. And that's true because I think what happens when you've gone from being the darling of the media to them just turning on you like a rubber.
And that can happen any moment. You're right. And yeah. it can happen on a dime. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And we've seen it happen in the last few months on a lot of issues. People who were popular, and the next thing they just hated their guts and everyone. It's like they're just a free-for-all, and everyone wants to attack. And you just can't build your self-esteem around what people are saying if you're doing what you're – but, you know, and then on the other hand, it's kind of a catch-22. If you're in the public's eye and you're an actor or, you know, a public figure, you kind of have to have the public liking you.
We're hoping for that. You know, all of us are hoping for that. But our inner worth can't rely on that because that can change at any moment. I think it was Abraham Maslow, the father of that hierarchy of self-actualization, who said, in order to be truly self-actualized, we have to be independent of the good opinion of others. And I thought, wow, you know what? Absolutely true. We have to know our path, where we are going, what we feel we need to do, and follow that path with our conscience as best we possibly can, and then the rest has to kind of fall where it falls, you know?
Right. We would never make any progress in the world if we try to please people. You just can't.
Oh, look at Albert Einstein. I mean, so many people thought that he was not gifted. His teachers told him that he was hopeless. No, I mean he was. People in our who have so influenced our world for the better were ostracized. Winston Churchill, he was a political pariah for years. No one believed what he was saying about here is an encroaching danger. Yet he helped his countrymen and countrywomen through the darkest times of their lives. Sometimes we have to be willing to be the different one in order to do what we can do and what we are led to do.
Yes, and it takes strength and strength of courage.
Yes, a lot of guts. Absolutely. It takes a lot of guts.
Alone. Because you will be standing alone. A lot of people are big bandwagoners, and they can jump up on the bandwagon when everything is beautiful. But when you take a stand for something that's not popular or unpopular idea, I mean, because to think that slavery was an unpopular idea, and to take that stand, you were like a seditionist.
Yes, absolutely. Right. But the people who have made huge differences in our lives have been willing to be that person. They've been willing to be the one who was, who didn't have a lot of people behind them. They've been willing to do that in order to be who they could be and change life for everyone.
Yes, and Martin Luther King, you know, when Black History Month came, this time I really, really heard him. I said, this man was a young man. And to say that I know that I have, you know, that I'm not going to live long. And, I mean, it's like he predicted and he prophesied his own death. And to say, but longevity has its place. But he had already seen the vision of, you know, a better place. So he didn't worry about giving up his life.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yes. And, I mean, I heard it, really heard it. And to think that how he was spit on, stabbed, and all this hose down. And I said, but it takes that to really make any difference in this world. You have to almost.
Yes.
And Jesus, I mean, we just had Easter. I was reading Matthew's and the things that were done to him and the betrayals. And so it is not an easy road for people. And then when you have the outer critic, then the inner critic. I don't know which is worse. So let's talk about healing your inner children, your inner child within yourself.
Yes. The inner child healing. Symptoms of someone, inner child represents wholeness in the adult psyche. This is how it was originally seen by Carl Jung, that the inner child was a symbol of wholeness in the adult mind. It has become symbolic as well now of inner wounds that we take on as children, things that we hear, emotional traumas that we're not capable of handling at that time. Many children encounter things in their family lives, in their school lives. They encounter situations that they're not equipped to handle. And when this happens, whatever this trauma or event might be, doesn't have to be significant to someone else, but it's significant to that child. What happens with an emotional trauma or even a physical trauma, the brain and body immediately register these significant events. and they disrupt the energy meridians in the body relative to that event until we actually rebalance the energy meridians. We remember those things, but we remember them in the subconscious mind. If something happens to a child that is too much for them to handle at that time, the subconscious mind will simply bury it, and that will become an event in the subconscious mind that creates fear when something else happens to them that is reminiscent of that event. Even if it's nothing like that, if it reminds the subconscious mind of that event, when something similar happens later in life, the child, who may now be an adult, will feel this immense distress, depression, anxiety, rage, all these kind of things, that because the subconscious mind is reminded of that old event. Healing the inner child and the wounds that inner child, that children can sustain when they're small, the emotional wounds, sets free a whole group of creative energies that we may not even realize that we have. Symptoms of having an inner child energy that needs to be healed. Symptoms would be continuous fatigue, serial illnesses, series of illnesses that can't seem to stop. Lack of creativity. An adult who is afraid to go forward in life. They feel effectively stopped because they experienced rejection a number of times in their childhood. These adults are afraid to expand in their careers, in their relationships many times. They don't know why, but they know that this is how they feel. If you look at any of these kinds of symptoms, look for an inner child that needs to be healed. A childhood trauma or event that was significant to that child at that time. This energy is still resonating there, and it's keeping them from moving forward. There are a number of energy medicine techniques that you can use to heal inner children. One is dialoguing, writing a dialogue with your inner child. An inner child here would be the energy pattern that's represented by discomfort now as an adult. So, for instance, if you... the author Sark, Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy, wrote about her various inner children that she discovered in therapy. One was a 7-year-old, one was a 3-year-old, I think, and these were different times in her life when she had experienced something that wasn't fully healed, when she didn't fully process what happened. And so if you have a written dialogue with your inner child, to do this, you would write a question with your dominant hand. Like if you're right-handed, you would write the questions that your adult wants to ask with your right hand. And then you would allow your left hand to write the answers. Allow your inner child to answer with your non-dominant hand. And the writing is really squiggly when you're writing with your non-dominant hand. But children think mostly from the right brain, which is the non-dominant part of the brain. So this is sometimes a very effective way to discover inner child energies that are waiting to be healed in you. People are amazed sometimes at the different things that their inner children want to talk to them. The inner child will sometimes talk to us through physical energy, through physical illness, because the body is the last defense against stress and against unfair treatment. One client did a lot of dialoguing with her inner child. She was asking her child, why she was so tired, how could she feel better, and her inner child wrote back, "You are not getting enough respect at work. You work very hard. You should be respected there. And I need to have more naps, and I need to have more time that's not just working. I need to have some time for fun." As people explore their inner child energies and do healing with these different energies, they find that they have more energy because the child is a source of great spontaneity and energy. They find that they are more creative because small child is incredibly creative. Everything they do is creative. They have no limits on their imagination. So when people work on healing inner child energies, inner child traumas, they find that they have more energy, they are healthier, they're more spontaneous, they have a larger level of joy, even in their everyday work life, because when we have arrested our inner child growth because of trauma, we also stop the growth of our creativity and all the things that are representative of that inner child energy. Creativity, energy, fun, sense of spontaneous joy, all those things. So healing the inner child can open up a world of beauty and joy to us. It's fun. We can enjoy our lives much more just as adults because we heal these, we go back and we heal these inner child energies. And that can be done with the dialoguing, with meridian tapping over specific events that we discover, with hypnosis. Any of these energy techniques is wonderfully effective for healing inner child traumas.
I see the word codependency, and for me, what leaps forward in my mind is adult children of alcoholics and some of their coping mechanisms that don't involve drinking. You know, a lot of times people think, well, if you were raised with an alcoholic parent, you will become one. But I think some of the more sicker people are the people who don't drink as a response, and that they're, you know, caring, trying to be controlling and carrying on everybody's, you know, trying to fix everybody, doing everything.
The codependency, you're entirely right. Engaging in continuous codependent relationships is a symptom of inner children needing to be healed, inner child energies needing to be healed. Adults who engage in these relationships are frequently children who never had a chance to be children. A lot of these kids, they took care of an adult who was in their life, or they were the caretaker for all of their siblings because the adults in their life were not capable of being parents, of doing parent things. So these children get used to taking care of their siblings, or even of the taking care of the adults in their lives who cannot take care of themselves. And these children only learn caretaking. They have no idea what their own needs are. And they, as a result, this is what they learn is the norm. This is what their lizard brain is telling them is normal. So they engage in repeat codependent relationships where they are the nurturer, and they become exhausted after a while taking care of the needs of the partner who is like a parasite. So engaging in these relationships, look back at your childhood. Look at where you learned this. Where did you learn to be only the caretaker? Where did you learn to ignore your own needs? When we heal ourselves, when we heal our own wounds, we are much better able to help the world heal. And we deserve this healing just for ourselves. We deserve to be healed. We deserve to attend to our inner needs, to love ourselves. We can love ourselves wonderfully and love the world even more.
Well, with that, we're coming up on the top of the hour. Dr. Lynn Zimmerman, please give out your title and your book one more time and where your books are available.
It is Heal Yourself, and by Dr. Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, Zimmerman. It's available on barnesandnoble.com and also amazon.com. And my websites are myenergymedicine.com and drlynnblog.com, D-R-L-Y-N-N-E, blog.com. On those websites, Dr. Lynn Blog and myenergymedicine.com, you can find all kinds of information about these different kinds of energy therapies, and the websites are also there for buying the books. Lots of information about how to use these therapies for yourself and what you can use them for. So myenergymedicine.com and Dr. Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, blog.com. And the book Heal Yourself is available at barnesandnoble.com and amazon.com.
Well, thank you so much. This has been such an enlightening show. I have enjoyed it so much. I've been taking notes in between.
Oh, thank you so much, and I've enjoyed it too. Thank you so much for helping me to share this information. I so appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing this information with the world, and this show will be archived, and it's also repeated on Thursday, I found out. But it's archived where the listeners can download it for future listening for those who didn't hear it today.
And awesome.
Yeah, so I just wish you all the best. And if you have a new book, please contact me and come back on the show when you have your next book.
I will be happy to. And thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a good night now. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
All right. Please return next week to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. We're going to have Dr. Rosie Milligan with Black Writers on Tour, which is April 21st, 2012. Have a great week. Love you all.